Welcome back to More Than a Hemline. My name is Danielle Immerman, CMO here at The Reflective, and I am joined by none other than our founder and CEO, Liza Sakai. Guys, we're just going to hop straight into it. We thought we would do a little high-level overview of our personal journey towards modesty, how it led us to starting The Reflective, what The Reflective's goals and missions really are, and where you come into it. Because we often find that we get many questions, many DMs about, like, what are you guys doing? Like, are you a blog? Are you influencers? Like, we just want to answer all of the nuts and bolts now. Get them out on the table, provide you with some clarity, maybe provide us with some clarity, because I think we always get lost in the sauce. So, Liza, let's just take it away. Like, I love your journey towards modesty, so let's just share that.
Oh, my God. I feel like I've spoken about this so many times that you must be sick of hearing it, but I guess not.
I could probably repeat it back to you.
Okay, I'm going to do it really high level because I know we have other podcasts with this content that people can tune into if they want to. But more generally, I grew up in a home where modesty had like zero emphasis, which is interesting because I came from both a Middle Eastern and a Jewish background, and in both worlds, modesty has like a pretty significant place. But it was never even spoken about. And my only exposure to it was through like educators that I had seen that, you know, dress the part, quote unquote. And I had a really negative connotation around that. I thought that modesty immediately meant like unattractive. That would be like the first word that came to mind. And I'd say the second word would be frumpy. And the third word would be, I'm trying to like put them in priority order, but probably oppressive. I also, you know, saw religion and faith as something pretty like chauvinistic, and modesty seemed to be like the epitome of that. Like you're, you know, dressing a woman a certain way in order to prevent a man from sinning or, you know, things like that. And that was the narrative I had always, you know, had painted for me, not even painted myself. And so you can imagine everyone was very confused, and all of a sudden I came home and was like, I'm only gonna wear long sleeve and long dresses for the rest of my life. Like everyone was very confused. But I think that the reason that I evolved in that way was because it didn't really come from even a place of faith. Faith was my introduction. Like I ended up, you know, trying to dress modestly. I would do it like once a week in college because I had, you know, a mentor who was teaching me about my faith, and modesty was a part of that, and I just was trying to explore every aspect of that. So part of that was the way that I dressed. So I remember I called it my modesty experiment, and it really was just an experiment for me. I would dress in like a longer, I would try to wear like a skirt or a dress, something longer, probably once a week, maybe twice a week, and I would try and just analyze like and build self-awareness around the difference in the way I felt on the days I did and the days I didn't. And on the days that I didn't, it was always pretty negative, which people think is weird. But it was a lack of confidence that I felt. I had a much quieter demeanor in like group settings. I remember I would never feel like confident enough to speak out. I never really felt so beautiful. And it didn't make sense because, like, your beauty comes from, you know, your face, which a lot of people consider, like, the window to your soul, and your personality. Like, it shouldn't depend on your body, and your confidence in no way should depend on your body. So for me, I took that as, like, okay, clearly there's some self-growth that needs to happen here, and that really developed that self-awareness around it, that, like, I had a change that I needed to make, and so I decided that I'm going to use modesty as the vehicle for that. And I literally told myself, like, it's just going to be like a 1-year stint so that I can, you know, learn more about my internal and my personality and develop myself in that way and develop my confidence to depend on something more, first of all, long lasting. Like, we're not always going to look so good. And my body is, of course, going to change as everyone's does. But also something more real and more authentic than the physical. So that was really how modesty came into play. But I also came from a background in fashion. I remember when I was young, like every single night before school, I would pick out my outfit, which like isn't a normal thing for a sixth grader. But it was really just ingrained in me. It was a real love for clothing as a mode of art and self-expression. And I moved in that direction also in my career. So, you know, by the time I started dressing modestly, I was working in fashion. And I wasn't really willing to give that up. I had worked really hard to get to where I was. And so I really tried to find a way to bring those two aspects together, even though that seemed at the time seemingly impossible because my entire association with modesty was unfashionable. So that was really my journey towards modesty in a way that also connected to like self-expression and fashion. And obviously in that way, it was my journey to the reflective. So that was a long-winded answer, as usual, to this question. But I think it's always interesting, especially because, you know, we're partners in this and we've been building this together for so long, to hear your perspective, Danielle, because I think you came from a more common direction, like in path towards modesty, and just like such a different mindset. So let's hear your side.
So funny, because as you were talking, I was just like thinking about my own journey and like how I can talk about it in a different way, because I'm so sick of my own story. We've spoken about it so many times. And like I realized when you said that you always experienced fashion as a form of self-expression, like even at the age of 11, 12, whatever, what have you, I was thinking about when I was younger and how I associated my relationship with fashion, like what that relationship looked like. And like I always describe myself as like not being particularly interested in fashion prior to modesty, but like it's really not true. I was always interested in fashion. It just, I wasn't by any means the fashionista. I used fashion more so like partly as a way to express myself, but also I feel partly as a way to relate to other people. Like I always really used the clothes that I wore as a way to like bond with people and like associate myself with the community. Like the first thing that I'm thinking about is like when I was in sixth grade, right? Like when I was in sixth grade, seventh grade, I transitioned to a different school. It was all girls. It was very preppy and it served pure Gossip Girl energy. So like I started dressing like Blair Waldorf. Like I can't tell you how many headbands I had in my drawer, like too many to count. And just like that kind of pattern in my own fashion experience like kept repeating itself. So in high school, like I went through a whole phase where I was very interested in music. Like I wanted to really work in the music industry. So I started dressing more like hipster and grunge. Like you could say maybe my interests and passions at the time just expressed itself. It was more so like I wanted to identify a certain way and I wanted to be a part of a certain community. So I changed my dress in order to do that.
Yeah. And we spoke at a high school recently and a young woman came over to us and she said, like, I don't know how to use fashion as a mode of, you know, expressing my personality, and that's why modesty is so hard for me. And I tried to ask her what she meant. She said, like, I see the girls in my grade buying, you know, a Sam jacket, so I go and I buy a Sam jacket. Like, I just do what the people around me do in order to fit in. And I think that's a very common relationship with fashion, and as a result people aren't really able to connect to clothing in like the way that it has the potential to provide for them.
Exactly. And that's what modesty did for me, right? Like I was so used to all of my life using fashion, which is a potentially very creative outlet, as really just a way for me to identify and bond with other people without thinking of like my own preferences when it comes to that style. So in college, like that was definitely amplified when I joined a sorority. Like I was literally buying like certain name brand products because that's what other girls had. And simultaneously when I was in a sorority, I was going on this whole religious journey, this whole spiritual journey, and became much more connected to my Judaism to the point where after I graduated from college, instead of like following the traditional trajectory and starting a job, moving to New York, I went to Israel and I studied, you know, there where I met you. And that's where my whole modest journey began, because the more observant I became in my Jewish practices, the more, you know, I wanted to take on in that regard, modesty being one of them. So like modesty wasn't a hard jump for me, and because of what I was speaking about prior, right? Like, clothes were always a vehicle for me to identify with other communities. So modesty wasn't a challenge because I now knew that I was wanting to identify with a religious Jewish community, and that's what people wore. They wore modest clothing. But this is where I think maybe I deviated from most people, and that's that I hated the styles like that most people wore. Like, I didn't want to look exactly cookie cutter like them because that just did not feel like me. And it's not necessarily that, like, you know, I thought less of the styles people were wearing. I just, like, I really at that point, like, it clicked, like, oh my, like, I don't want to wear that. I'm not going to feel good in it, like, at all. And, like, I can still associate with this community by wearing modest clothing and at the same time have access to this whole pool of creativity within myself where I can dress in a way that still allows me to associate that community and expresses myself. And so that's where, like, my modest journey and, like, I think our collective journeys towards the reflective began, because, you know, you came at it from a different angle, I came at it from a different angle, but we both had this shared vision of creating an opportunity for women to realize the same thing, and that's that modesty doesn't have to be boring, cookie cutter, black and white. It can be this amazing vehicle in which to express yourself and your style without compromising your values and your modest standards.
Right. And I feel like something you touched on that really, like, we're here obviously on this podcast trying to speak to what's our long-term vision? What do we do? Because that's a question we get asked a lot. And I think you really touched on, like, the long-term vision. Like, I'm talking, you know, 20 years from now, what do we see the reflective doing? And I think for both of us, it was not so much about modesty, but about what modesty helped us discover about clothing and delivering that message to the world. So we're starting with this niche because this is who we relate to, and we saw a huge gap for, you know, women who were choosing to dress modestly in the fashion industry at large. But it's more so about, you know, showing to the world that your clothing is your first and foremost, like, your number one representation of who you are in your interactions with people in the day-to-day, and by allowing them to speak for you in a way that's aligned with your personality and, like, even your mood for that day, it's going to just align you as a person and allow you to be the best version of yourself. And I think we both felt that people, including ourselves prior to this moment, were underestimating the power of clothing. And so just long-term vision is building a space within the fashion industry. On a practical level, we don't necessarily know what that looks like yet, but just a space within the industry for that type of conversation and for that form of self-discovery that's not trend-oriented, that's not about what someone next to you is wearing, but that's about, like, who do I want to be and how do I allow my clothing to express that for me?
I love it. Love it. What about the short-term vision?
So we talk about this often, and I think it'll help just to backtrack to the problem and then go into the solution. Because I remember I'm literally looking at my patio right now. It was like mid-COVID. I was sitting on this patio and I called you and I'm like, Danielle, how annoying is it to dress modestly? This was like the beginning phases. And you're like, it's so annoying. Everyone knows that. And I'm like, but it doesn't have to be. Like, why is it so annoying? And we flushed out the problem, and we felt like across all levels, there was just no real solution. Like, first of all, from a practical perspective, so the physical act of shopping, if you go to a, like, modest retailer, so let's say, like, you know, small modest boutiques, a lot of them are, the product really didn't speak to just who we were as people and to most modern day women. And this is not across the board. There are obviously stores that are doing an amazing thing, and either way, they're serving a certain collective of people as they should, but it just wasn't serving us. And a lot of the product was antiquated, and the quality for, you know, the prices being charged felt like robbery to me. Like, I would see things that I had seen at a sample sale, you know, 3 years prior, still marked full price. So there was, you know, that area of frustration. So then I think we both turned to, like, the modest brands who are amazing, and a lot of them will be on our eventual e-commerce site. But there just wasn't enough optionality within the brands because there aren't so many of them, and a lot of them are working towards just the basics of modesty because we don't have that yet. So the basic slip dress or the basic shirt dress, and we both felt like we needed more color and like vibrancy than that. So that didn't really work. And then our last resort was like, okay, let me go to just an average retailer. So we would go to like a Zara or an H&M, but the process of filtering through clothes, whether on the website or in store, and then you find a dress and then you realize the back has a giant hole in it. So you put it back and then you find another dress and you're so excited and you go home and you put it on and it's fully see-through where there's a slit literally up to your underwear. And you're just like, now I have to spend even more time going to the tailor and fixing this or returning it. And that was just a crazy process. So that was frustrating. And you would think it'd be over by now, but no, there was even more frustration because you would see some retailers trying to target, quote unquote, the modest consumer, not because they cared about diversity and inclusion, but because it was a huge market opportunity. I mean, we both know this is by 2024, they say the modest market is going to be between $370 and $400 billion. So it's massive. And these retailers took note of that, and so they plugged a little filter on the side that said modest. And when you would click on these filters, I'm not kidding, it would pull in like watches and incense and earrings. And I'm like, this is all great product. It has nothing to do with me, my culture, or my values. So across the board on a practical level, shopping modestly sucked. Like, it really was all in all frustrating. And then there was the emotional side, which was what we both faced when we started dressing modestly, that within, you know, the religious communities and spaces, we got judgment for being so colorful and so out there and wearing prints. And then within the not modest spaces, quote unquote, like our secular lives, we were challenged because people thought it was archaic and oppressive and restrictive. So all around, we were just wrong. And there was such a need for a shift in narrative emotionally for women who were dressing modestly. So one, they could be empowered to dress in a more vibrant fashion without being ashamed of it and in a way that allowed them to really express themselves. And if that's wearing all black for you, then go for it. But just like giving the space and the choice. And two, for the fashion industry at large, like changing the opinion around modesty. Like, yes, 100 years ago, modesty was quote unquote inflicted on a lot of women. And today it still is in many countries and we don't deny that. But for a lot of women, this is just a simple choice. A lot of women, it's not even a religious choice. It's just a personal choice, like myself. It's a lifestyle that we've taken on because we feel safer and more comfortable and even more beautiful, even though that's hard for them to imagine. So there were these two sides of the problem that needed a resolution. And so the initial concept for The Reflective was like, let's just start another brand, you know, with more product. But we felt like that wasn't a big enough concept to tackle this huge issue that existed. So that's really where the larger concept for The Reflective was born. And we label it just a platform to purposely keep it vague because it's really meant to be able to tackle all of these problems, maybe not at the same time, but one by one for all women. So again, we get this question all the time, like, you guys are both Jewish, so is this a Jewish platform? Like, absolutely not. This is an interfaith platform that's here to serve every single type of woman who chooses to dress modestly. She can be atheist for all I care, as long as once in a while, it doesn't have to be every day even, but like, you know, for certain events or for work or whatever it is, this woman is trying to cover up just a little bit more. We want to be the place that she can turn to. So vision-wise, that's the short-term vision. And Danielle, maybe you can jump into the mission, like on a practical level, what are we doing day to day in order to serve these customers? Because we have so many moving parts to this because it's such a large gap. So I think that would be hugely helpful for people to realize like how many, you know, solutions have already been created for them and what's to come in the future. But let's just start with what we have going on right now.
We are first and foremost a e-commerce website. So we provide you with all of your modest fashion needs on one platform. So that means you can type in the-reflective.com, come to our website, and never leave. You can find everything you need for every modest fashion occasion all there, and it will provide you with on-trend, fashion-forward, modest finds that meet your modest standards because we all have different definitions of modesty and that all looks different for everyone. So first and foremost, we are the space for you to find any product you need according to your modest standards. Then we have newsletters that come out 3 times a week that offer all of our latest roundups are highly specific curated edits that you, with your experience as a buyer at Bloomingdale's, have selected. We have our podcast that you're listening to right now, which provides all of our inspirational, empowering, and educational content on modesty. And that funnels down really to everything else on Instagram and other social media platforms. I could ramble off all of the different social media platforms, but really your best bet is to just go find them and peruse at your own leisure. Really, though, the goal of all of this, without, you know, continuing my spiel, is to, like you said, shift the narrative, provide inspiration, provide empowerment, show women that modesty doesn't have to be archaic, and provide helpful, practical tools in order to start making those actionable next steps to A, either dress modestly if you're not right now and you have a desire to, or B, dress modestly in a way that feels better for you. And like, we get into this whole conversation about, well, you shouldn't necessarily do things because it should feel good. Like, you should challenge yourself, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, all that's true. At the same time, though, like, you can uphold whatever modesty standard you want and feel good. They don't have to contradict. So I think that all of that is to say that it takes an army, it takes a village, and the most beneficial aspect of all of this is our community. Because when you're struggling alone and you're, you know, making major changes in your life, or you're grappling to express your style authentically, you need other people around you to have the awareness and just the comfort that you're not alone. Because I think so often as women, we've been conditioned to express ourselves in this perfect way, right? That's what social media has done. We all look perfect and happy all the time. We all have all of the nice designer name brand things, even though it's probably fake and from China. And ultimately, like, that's not serving us. What's serving us is being real, being authentic, opening up, connecting to each other. And that's what, you know, all of our social platforms do, is they bring people together to express the real struggles of modesty authentically. So that's my spiel. I would love to do like a rapid fire, like what people often ask us, and kind of break down the logistics of why or why not we can or cannot, what have you. Now, Liza, I think the first part, not part, but really what people ask us often is, why, you know, are you not supporting smaller brands or sustainable brands? There's a lot of inclusivity that people request and have every right to request. On a practical day-to-day, me and you grinding at it, what are some barriers that get in our way of supporting small brands, sustainable brands, and all of that jazz?
So it's a really important question that people ask, and I'm glad that they do. But from, you know, a practical and technical side, our business model right now makes it really difficult for us to, like, just technologically work with those smaller brands. I come from the world of retail, and if you're familiar with retail, you'll have heard of something called EDI, which is basically like almost a verification for bigger brands. It's mostly bigger brands because they're the ones that can afford it, that allow them to be like systemized with big name retailers. And those are the retailers that we've partnered with in order to get product onto our site. So smaller brands are not EDI verified, and therefore they're not working with these bigger systems, these third party systems that we're collaborating with in order to get product right now. So it's a lot of technical jargon that I'm not going to go into, but it's basically like physically impossible for us to do it in a way that allows us to continue thriving as a business and growing. If you guys don't know, we are actually a bootstrap business. So we started this from the ground up on our own. And as much as we're here to serve a community, which is our number one priority, in order to do so, we do need to make a certain amount of income to keep us going. So we've found a way to work with those smaller brands that might not be e-commerce related, so they might not be able to be on our website yet, but we have features available for them that they're always open and welcome to participate in. We feature them in our newsletter, on our social channels, But it's just much, much harder to get them on the website right now. But go forward, the goal is to have all of these brands on our website, because especially the smaller modest brands, those are the ones that are making the changes in the space that we're trying to make. And we want to amplify their voices more than anything. So we are actually shifting our current business model into one that will allow us to incorporate all of those brands. But in order to do that well and to do that right, like anything in business, it takes time and energy. And so it's a slow process, but you guys can expect a brand new website and really just a relaunch of The Reflective with a lot of these smaller brands and sustainable brands happening sometime this fall. So I hope that gives you guys something to look forward to. And if you're a brand that's listening, I really do hope that you reach out, because we're so excited to finally have the opportunity to feature all of you. But yeah, that's really the technical perspective on why it hasn't happened yet, but it's always been a huge part of our mission, is to amplify the voices of those brands that we really believe in and that we think belong in our curation that might not have had, you know, a voice yet.
The other question we get asked a lot, it's not so much a question, but I think a general state of confusion that people find themselves in, and that is, are we influencers? Or what? What's going on here?
So it's a hard question to answer, because I think, you know, we've created this definition of an influencer as someone who, like, you know, gets sent clothes and then tries them on and talks about them and promotes product, and that doesn't fit who we are. We're an e-commerce platform. So let's just give an analogy of, you know, people that we know. So ShopUp is a website, right? That's like The Reflective in this analogy. And then Kylie Jenner is the influencer on a level that, like, you know, people are used to. So ShopUp and Kylie Jenner will have a partnership so that Kylie wears the clothes that are being sold on ShopUp's site. So in that way, no, we are not a typical influencer. But if you listen to the word, it's about influence. So we definitely do have influence, and our goal is to continue to have more and more influence so that we can make change. And so in that way, we are an influencer. So I like to say that we're, you know, we've married the concepts of a content platform and an e-commerce platform into one. So take like a Vogue or a Who What Wear and marry them off to a ShopUp or an Amazon, and you have The Reflective.
Yeah, so basically we won't be accepting free services in order to post some service, but we have the desire to create change, and part of what creates change is amplifying your voice via social media. Therefore, there we go. Should we touch on the interfaith component?
Totally. I mean, it's always sticky, but I think it's so important. What would you say the question is that we get often?
I would say we are two Jewish women, and I think it's pretty clear that we are Jewish. And because of that, and because we're pretty present on social media, I think there's this natural assumption made that we're a Jewish business, which is totally fair. However, we're not. We're an interfaith business, no faith business. We're a no-faith business addressing the interfaith market and the atheist market. So I think because of that general confusion, people often have what to say.
I think this is a really big topic to tackle. And I think, you know, if I'm the one speaking to it, then it comes from the Jewish perspective. And that's not fair. And that's biased. So we are going to have a longer form podcast on this with guests from each faith, really speaking about their perspective on modesty and really just showing our community how similar we all are. But just from a business perspective, when we started this, we did think about doing this for, quote unquote, the Jewish woman. But for us, just vision-wise, that was thinking really small. And mission-wise, it was antithetical to my beliefs. I believe that, you know, we're all keeping to the same value system. Modesty comes from the same place in each book that we read. It's the same reasoning behind it. So why do we all think we're so different? Just because it looks a little different on you than it does on me, because you wear pants and I wear a skirt, because you wear a hijab and I wear a wig. Like it was completely illogical to me. And so we saw this on a practical level. Obviously, you know, the more people you can target, the more of a business opportunity it is, but that was never what it was about for us. It was on an emotional level. We saw it as an opportunity for unification. And to show women, because I think women are really the ones who always have the power to change, to show the women in each community how similar they are, and to shed light on that through fashion, through clothing, through modesty, in order to bring us all together.
Thank you all for listening to another episode of More Than a Hemline. Stay tuned for more episodes to come on this topic and more. If you liked this episode, please, please, please leave us a review on the podcast player of your choice. You know the drill by now. The only way to move on up in the charts is by leaving us a review. And we hope to move up on the charts because we want to make modesty mainstream. Anyway, if you want to get in touch with me, if you want to get in touch with Liza, you can email me at danielle@the-reflective.com with all of your questions, comments, concerns, interests. I would love to get on a 15-minute call with you. So anyway, goodbye. Have an amazing week.